Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the radio program on American Family Radio. Yes, I did come back. Been gone, I don't know, a week ago Friday, Ed Battagliano. And so who hosted the show with you last week?
We had a bunch of folks on different times.
Lauren impressive, Stewart. I guess, for you to remember who they were.
Well, we had Lauren. Abe was on with me, and Ray Pritchard was on.
Any of them talk about staging a coup?
No. I found out nobody wants your job, Tim.
Is that good or bad?
It depends.
All right.
If you like your job, it's good.
Hey, it was good. We went up for the Values Voters Summit a week from Friday and Saturday in Washington, D.C. Got to see a lot of good friends and good patriots there in our nation's capital. Had the Republican nominee for president, Donald Trump, spoke. The vice presidential candidate, Mike Pence, the governor of Indiana, spoke, among two of the highlighted speakers at that event. And then went on a tour with a lot of our listeners to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. And then back in Washington, D.C. for our spiritual heritage tour of Mount Vernon and our nation's capital. So that's what I was doing last week.
Right.
And if you want to check my phone, you can see I think I walked 17 miles or something. You know, you got that little app on your phone. You can tell.
Yeah,
you
I never use it. It's too depressing.
Well, you walk to the fridge and back, don't you?
I power walk to the popcorn machine here at work.
You do power walk.
I do. I get a little exercise, right, whatever it takes, 30 seconds. It's an intense 30 seconds, though, let me tell you.
Okay, well, you have to put that on video so it can go viral. All right, I'd like to talk about today, we have a couple of guys sitting in with us to discuss issues with us. You want to introduce them?
Yeah, well, Abe Hamilton really needs no introduction, though I'll introduce him anyway. He's public policy analyst, assistant counsel for AFA, and Abe actually spoke at the Values Voters
Summit
on behalf of AFA.
Did a great job, too, Abe.
I saw it. It was excellent.
Did I call you Abe? I meant Abe.
Hey, it works.
Yeah.
Abe.
No, he did a great job.
Guy over there in the corner.
Your talk is available. People can go watch it, right?
Where? Yes, you can get it from valuesvotersummit.org, or you can get it on YouTube. You can find
it's
it on
only
YouTube.
20 minutes.
It's only 20
so
minutes.
So if I go to YouTube and I type something in, what do I type
you
in?
You can type in Abraham Hamilton III, Values Voters Summit, it'll pop up.
It was really good.
He gave a 20-minute talk. It was excellent. And
I watched
it. Proud of Abe because he was representing AFA there. Anyway, Abe's with us, and we have a special guest in studio.
Yes, Bishop E.W. Jackson, who's president of STAND. And Bishop Jackson, that stands for Staying True to America's National Destiny.
That's
is that correct?
Yes.
Welcome. Bishop Jackson did our devotions this morning.
And, one.
Just devotion.
He said devotions.
And I went back to my office, and I said, I'm never calling myself a preacher again. It was amazing.
Yeah.
It was really outstanding. Thank you for being on with us, Bishop Jackson.
Honored to have an opportunity.
Now, you hail from
Chesapeake, Virginia, right outside right near Virginia Beach, for those who don't know the area, Virginia Beach in Norfolk.
How long have you lived there?
About 19 years, actually.
Now, that's big military.
Oh,
Navy?
Look, the largest naval base in the world, the Norfolk Naval Base, is from 10 miles from my home.
Mm, yeah. Wow. Can you, they have tours there for the public?
Yes, they do.
Do they really?
Yes.
I'd like
yes.
to do that sometime.
Yeah, I would.
I think that'd be very interesting.
Yeah.
So that's the largest naval base in the world.
It's the largest naval base in the world.
Now, tell us about your what you do there, what's your church and all that.
Well, I pastor the Call Church. We've got two churches, one in Boston, Massachusetts, which we founded a number of years ago, and one in Chesapeake, Virginia, which we founded a little bit more than a decade ago. And I pastor my church, of course, and people who see me speaking around the country probably wonder, does he really do it? Yes, I really do. I'm really back in my pulpit most Sundays. And I also run STAND, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to bringing people together across racial and cultural lines to preserve and defend our Judeo-Christian heritage and values.
Can I ask you a quick question? This is kind of a little bit off topic, but I was born in the Boston area, grew up in Nashua, New Hampshire. What's the spiritual climate like in terms of Boston and the gospel?
Not good.
Not good. I left there in 78, but
Not good.
Yeah.
Look. Remember, Boston, Massachusetts, is one of the earliest states. In fact, when I was there in the 80s, we were battling over the whole gay concept of gay rights. Mm. And they're one of the earliest states. I think they might have beat California, but they were neck and neck. One of the earliest states to pass a gay rights bill, came right back and passed a gay students' rights bill. And of course, they were one of the earliest states to embrace same-sex marriage. So that's kind of the climate of Boston. It's a very, very liberal city. I think the Tea Party patriots who once threw tea into Boston Harbor would wonder what in the world happened to Boston and went from being anti-government control to being a state of government has the final say, excuse me, on everything.
Wow. Because I know Glisson, the Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, it actually got its start in Massachusetts. Massachusetts, as you mentioned, first state to legalize gay marriage. And, I was hoping there would be a little bit of a little spark there. But
all of New England, quite frankly, has lost their heritage as far as their Christianity.
Right.
They really have. We still have a church there, though, and we're hoping for an awakening and revival there, too.
Yeah.
Well, guys, we got about 20 minutes here. I did want to talk about the terror attacks on New York City and Minnesota. Abe, what do you have? You been tracking the news? What do you know about?
You can't jump to conclusions, Tim.
Oh, yeah, I know. You mean the fact that I just called it a terrorist attack?
Yeah. You see, who knows? How do you know that?
Well,
of course,
I know
I'm joking.
I know you're joking, but they're looking for a guy in New York.
Mm-hmm.
May be responsible.
Yes.
For the
and New Jersey as well.
And New Jersey. His name.
And they're not looking for blonde-haired Swedes. Okay, they're looking for Muslims. Of course, Muslims can be any nationality. We understand that. But what I'm saying is, it's the typical thing that people expect. They're looking for a person of Middle Eastern descent, who committed to jihad.
Ahmad Khan Rahami, who was born in Afghanistan.
I'm saying the things that everybody thinks and knows, but you won't hear on the media because of political correctness.
True.
So but he's wanted, Bishop.
Yes.
I think by the FBI. So that's kind of like a, what do you call that, an all points bulletin?
Yeah, APB, all points bulletin.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that go on in New York. Now, nobody died as a result, but they had
29 were injured.
Yes.
29 were injured. And many could have died had they been a little bit closer, because the bomb was much like the Boston Marathon bombing.
Yes.
I mean, it was real powerful.
Yes.
And then what happened in New Jersey, we were fortunate again that nobody was killed or hurt, because a bomb was placed in a garbage can.
Mm-hmm.
And it was set. It was timed to go off when people who were running a 5K, I think, was part of the Marine base or Marine.
Yep. It was a Marine Corps. It was a Marine Corps fundraiser. That's right. That's exactly right.
So the bomb was timed to go off when the runners would have been coming through that area, and the race was delayed, or otherwise it could have injured, maimed, killed people. So you had two terrorist attacks, one in New Jersey, one in New York. And then we had a knife-wielding Somali refugee.
Mm-hmm. Another one.
Yeah.
Yes.
Another one in Minnesota. I had a friend of mine who lives in Minnesota, and she told me 4 or 5 years ago, she says, hey, they've dropped, she means the federal government and President Obama, they've dropped thousands
of Somalians.
Right. It may have happened under the Bush administration.
I think it started Bush administration.
But they've dropped these Somalis, thousands of Somalis, into the frozen tundra of Minnesota, and they have no. They're not going to integrate into our society because many of them So you have one of those men went into the mall or the shopping center, and he had a knife in his hand. He's asking people some way or another, are they Muslim? Then he slices, stabs eight or nine of them.
One was a little girl.
Before he's shot by an
off-duty police officer,
yeah. Shot him. I don't know. The police officer acted probably hastily. He should have at least tried to talk to this guy before he shot him. Excuse the bad humor there. I'm just taking the PC left's position on things like this.
And killed him. Killed the man.
Yeah. He killed the man.
Yeah, well, remember, he got up.
Yes, he got up. He shot him
third time. Right.
That's right.
Who,
so
the police officer?
The terrorist, right. Okay. So at the very least, after he shot him the first time and he got up, he should have said, well, listen, since I've shot you once,
right.
We won't do that again. Let's
right.
talk now.
Right, let's talk. We're being facetious, but this is the kind of line you get from people who are anti-police all the time. But in all seriousness, Bishop, we have a situation where if you live in New York, you've got to be worried.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Look, I think if you live in any major metropolitan area,
right.
And I've said this because this is the way I think. When I go into malls, I go into an airport, you know, before you go through security, you know, I'm looking around.
You're vulnerable.
Watching because you just never know. Because these are very, very soft targets that could easily be attacked and a lot of people hurt.
Yeah. Right.
Because nobody's gone through security yet, like
that's
in
right.
the airport. So nobody knows whether you're carrying a weapon.
What about knife control, Abe?
Or pressure cooker control.
Pressure cooker control and knife control, will we see a move to legislate?
Maybe we have a sit-in on the congressional building's floor.
The ISIS claimed that the Somali refugee terrorist in Bishop in Minnesota was a disciple of theirs.
They called him specifically a soldier of the Islamic Caliphate.
Yeah. And that's what he said, Allah Akbar, and he asked, I don't know how you ask somebody when you're slicing them up.
Well, are you Muslim?
Are you Muslim?
In other words, I don't want to cut you if you're a Muslim.
Mm-hmm. Right. But of course, you know, it's Muslims
religion
who are the primary victims of this, right? Yeah. Not Christians.
You know, has President Obama said anything about this yet? Because Drudge is reporting that Obama stays silent on bombings in New York, and I don't know. I haven't heard.
I think not to defend the administration's approach on this. I think they wait until they get the information from the FBI, and you know, saying it definitely is. But now we definitely terrorist related is what I'm saying. But now someone we were talking this morning in our Monday morning leadership. Meeting and somebody was saying that the media on CNN cut out the part where Hillary Clinton called this a bombing.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Actually edited that out and then went after Donald Trump for calling it a bombing.
Well, what calling what a bombing?
The explosion. There must be a whole series of possible things that explode. So
you mean like a gas line or something like that?
Look.
A propane tank.
So hold on just a minute. Let me understand this. Yeah. You're saying that CNN showed a videotape of Hillary Clinton, and she said they censored out the part of her comments where she cited bombings?
Yep. Bombings.
Yes. Yeah.
She referred to it as a bombing.
Okay.
Yep.
But they censored that out of her, or at least they didn't play that part of her comments.
They edited that out of the video
protect
that they
her.
Showed. So that they could attack Trump for calling it a bombing.
Yes. Hey,
can
by the way.
Can they at least hide it a little bit better than that?
Hey, welcome back, Tim.
Yeah. I know.
Welcome back to the insanity.
I know. With this, the media is completely sold out for Hillary Clinton, but... we mentioned if you're a New Yorker, you have to be, or any large metropolitan area, you have to be on edge a little bit because what if these jihadis start attacking New York City or any other city?
Right.
I was walking.
Des Moines, Iowa. I mean, it's.
Well, but Bishop, how are we to deal with this when it's, I'm talking about when jihadism is directly related to Islamic teaching, and you can't talk about that, though.
Jesus said you shall know the truth shall make you free. And I always say, if the truth makes you free, then lies obviously put you in bondage. And so to me, I think it's just the opposite. I think the president waits, and I think they send the message to the FBI, don't you dare associate this with Islam in any way. And I think that's why the FBI is so skittish.
I got you. Okay, you think it's a reverse. In other words, the White House is not as necessary, as Ed suggested. Maybe they are waiting on the facts. I don't know. But the political correctness, the purging, if you well, they, there was the FBI purged. Is that the right word?
Yes.
Their own
documents, their own manuals, their own instructional information concerning how to deal with terrorism. They literally
you cannot use the words Islamic terrorism
redacted
or jihad.
Any reference to jihad or Islam.
Right,
Nedel
Hassan,
when he
killed people at Fort Hood, that was an act of workplace violence.
Workplace violence. Yes.
So what are they going to say about this, Bishop? I'm talking about the White House when it's clear that the FBI is on a manhunt for an Islamic jihadist. And the Somali refugee in Minnesota is yelling Allah Akbar and asking people if they're Muslim before he slices them up or not. And ISIS is taking.
Well, of course, I'm a Christian. I don't gamble. Right. But if I were, I would say, let's see how long it takes before the president of the United States says, now we have to remember that this has nothing to do with Islam.
Right.
And we should not jump to conclusions about Islam or Islamic people. His visceral reaction is always to defend Islam. As he says he's a Christian, I would love to see him for once defend Christianity, but whenever he talks about Christianity, it always seems to be negative.
Why
like,
is
well,
that?
You know, don't forget the Crusades.
The Crusades, I know.
Right. I mean, it's like.
I know. Where do you think that comes from?
I think that the president has a deep and abiding affection for Islam.
Because he grew up in it?
And because his father was Muslim, because he's got this background in it, because as I understand it, Jeremiah Wright was formerly Muslim and, of course, is best friends with Louis Farrakhan.
Right.
Chicago is very heavily Islamic. I think he's just been around it a lot, and he's got a lot of affection for it.
Doesn't believe in jihadism. In other words, all these Muslim attacks around the world on a daily basis— He doesn't believe they're real Muslims?
No, not according to him.
They've hijacked the faith.
Yeah.
He famously
they've
said
they've been doing that hijacking the faith for about what 1400 years now?
Well, that's true.
Starting with Muhammad.
Yeah.
He
hijacked his own faith.
Just in terms of the Somalis, was reading a CNS news story that says that almost 100,000 Somali refugees have been admitted to the United States since 9/11. 99.6% are Muslim, and the vast majority.
Since what year, Ed?
Since 9/11.
2001.
So 2001.
15 years.
Yes, I'm sorry. 9/11, 2001. So 99.6% were Muslim. 30% were males between the ages of 14 and 50.
Well, that's the demographic that's committing the
right
acts of jihad. You notice you never see a 70-year-old man?
Yeah.
Committing a jihad act, or even a 14-year-old girl. It's extremely rare. This must be the religious teaching within Islam, Abe, that you, if you die as a martyr, you go to paradise with 70 virgins or...
72
virgins. Mm-hmm. In other words, there's a teaching. This is what's never, never, ever explained by the secular media, even though it's easy to research. Is because you wonder, what is the motivation for a person to blow themselves up? Or why do they want to die at the hands of of the American army? Well, there is a teaching within Islam that's talking about jihad, that if you die in a holy cause fighting the infidel, then you bypass any question of whether you go to paradise or not. If you can think of it in this way, folks, a Christian believes that when we die, you go to heaven or hell. That's what the Bible teaches. And the people that go to heaven are the people who have repented and trusted of their sin and trusted in Christ for forgiveness of sin so that they can be made right with God. That's mm-hmm. So we do believe in heaven. The Islamic faith also teaches a paradise. And I don't know what they call their place of what their hell, damnation. But it's a fatalistic religion in the sense that you don't know. It's whatever Allah wills. Mm-hmm. And you don't know till you die where you go. Whereas the Christian is assured of heaven. Mm-hmm. The Muslim is not assured of anything. It's whatever Allah wills after I die. Mm-hmm. Now, but if you commit an act of jihad where you die in the holy cause of Islam, then you can, the question is not there. You go straight to paradise. So you say, punched. So you apply that, excuse me for getting so lengthy here, but if you apply that to the mind of a 23-year-old Muslim male, and who I think every person has a natural resistance to blowing themselves up. That's right. Just the you know that's
survival
not
instinct.
That's sure. That's unnatural for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so a young male Muslim has to say, well, you know what? I'm going to blow myself up, or I'm going to attack people and get shot like in Minnesota. But my payoff is paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And that would explain the motivation why people, especially the demographic of, a 17 to a 30-year-old mm-hmm. Muslim demographic, does all these crimes.
Yeah, and that's also why you have lots of the women in the, who are raised in Islamic tradition who would love nothing more but for their sons to die as mujahideen.
But if I can explain that as inarticulately as I did in about 3 minutes— how come you, Bishop, you never hear this on, well, you might hear it on Fox on occasion, but the other mainstream media won't cover the motivation behind why a guy in Minnesota does what he does here.
No, because we're told that they do this because of Guantanamo Bay.
Right.
That's the recruitment tool.
Oh, my, here comes.
But, you know, and think about this, Tim, to take your analysis just one step further. Think about the sexual repression in Islam, that women aren't allowed to show any part of themselves, that they're not allowed to go out in public right. without being accompanied by a man. You got young kids whose hormones are raging, and you're told that the payoff for right. blowing yourself up is mm-hmm. all that sexual repression.
Right.
Now get satisfied mm-hmm. in paradise with 72 virgins, which is hedonistic
yeah.
and just really kind of degenerate.
Yeah.
But that's what they sell kids on.
Well, mm-hmm. and you add to that the fact that a lot of these young men are in the West, covered up with pornography. A lot mm-hmm. of them, like the London bombers, I think, they had prostitutes and all that. If you're a young man, you're going, ain't no way I'm going to paradise. I mean, I'm corrupt. I mean, they're seeing their own sinfulness, and they're thinking, there's no way I'm going to last in life and be judged favorably by Allah. But the payoff, like you said, Bishop,
yeah.
now the payoff is I can have my virgins. I can escape judgment
mm-hmm.
and go to paradise.
That's why. So that makes sense, if babe. I mean, that makes sense if you're in that demographic I've just described, which is where the vast majority of these jihadis are.
Mm-hmm.
What we've just said here, because nobody ever in the media, you rarely get it explained. Mm-hmm. They say, well, these people are crazy who commit these acts. Well, no, they're not. You don't have 25,000 or how many ISIS members there are over there in Syria and Iraq. It's not a convention of mentally ill people from around the world.
That's right. What they say. In Dabiq, they said, we're not crazy. And right. y'all know
no.
we're not crazy.
That's their magazine.
They have a magazine.
Yeah, explaining the rationale of their murderous rampage.
And they laugh at the president because they say, we are Islamic experts. Right. He is not.
Right.
So we are Islamic.
Right.
He doesn't know what he's talking about.
We'll be back momentarily. Stay with us. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network.
Thank you. Next time on Today's Issues, we'll talk with Jeremy Dice, attorney with First Liberty Institute, about the case of a little boy ordered to stop sharing Bible verses at school.
Students and teachers do not shed their constitutional rights when they walk through the schoolhouse gates. That's such a great general rule of thumb kind of understanding of this issue to have.
We'll also talk with Michael Savage, author of Scorched Earth, and Jen Bricker, author of Everything is Possible. That's next time on Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on AFR.
On the first day of our tour of Israel, we will stand on the Mount of Olives and look out over the old city of Jerusalem. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. March 9 through 17, we'll be going to Israel, the Holy Land. This is 2017, of course. We'll be flying from New York City, JFK Airport, direct to Tel Aviv, and then we'll begin our 9-day tour of Israel, including Jerusalem, Bethlehem, Jericho, Tiberias, Nazareth, the Sea of Galilee, the Jordan River, and all the places you've read about since you were a child in the Bible. For more information on this tour, you can order a brochure by calling us at 800-FAMILIES, 800-FAMILIES, option 5. Also, you can visit the website twholyland.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. Well, it appears Islamic radicals are once again waging jihad on American soil, and as usual, President Obama is AWOL. As of this broadcast, there have been attacks in New York, New Jersey, Minnesota, and a charity run for Marines. On Saturday night, just moments after the New York bombing, the president was cracking jokes about the Islamic State, cracking jokes while New Yorkers were digging shrapnel out of their bodies. Not only has he not defeated ISIS, but now they are here, living among us, and more than willing to blow us all up in the name of Allah. But instead of calling out the president's fecklessness, the media attacks Donald Trump, calling him Islamophobic. Meanwhile, reporters across the fruited plain once again seem stunned that Islamic radicals may be responsible for the latest attacks. What part of "they want to kill us all" does the media not comprehend? Stay safe, America. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. American Family Radio, thank you for listening to AFR. Bishop E.W. Jackson's been with us for the last half hour as our special guest in studio. We've been talking about what's been in the news the last 24 hours or so. That is the attacks in New York City with the bomb, two bombs. Well, one in New York, one in New Jersey, and then the knife attack on by the Somali Muslim male in Minnesota against non-Muslims. He asked them if they were Muslim before he cut people or stabbed them with his knife. But we've been talking about events in the news. Bishop, what is your website? Where can people go to read about your organization?
Yeah, they can go check us out at standamerica.us, just like it sounds, standamerica.us. And, and they can also go to our Facebook page, E.W. Jackson SR, or to our Twitter page, same thing, E.W. Jackson SR, because we'll be commenting on these issues all day long.
Now, you're speaking in Waynesboro, Mississippi tonight. That's why you're in Tupelo.
Yes, sir. I'm speaking at Waynesboro Baptist Church this evening at 6 o'clock, I think. And love to invite anybody in the area. Come on down and say hello.
So this evening at the Waynesboro Baptist Church in Waynesboro, Mississippi, you'll be the featured speaker.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Bishop, for sitting in with us.
Oh, listen, thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Amen. God bless you.
Thank you, Bishop.
If you want to be in touch with American Family Radio, you can go on our website, afr.net. We also have an app where you can download on your cell phone or your iPad or something like that. You can download the app and listen to American Family Radio anywhere in the world, clear as a bell. As long as you have an internet connection, then you can take advantage of that app. We have thousands of people who listen on the AFR app. It's free. to download. It takes about 60 seconds. You're listening to American Family Radio. You think, Abe, this is kind of, this is different. These attacks have a different feel to them than even San Bernardino or Orlando, for example. I'm talking about these attacks because this is the great unknown. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm trying to say? This makes the public more skittish. If you have an attack in Orlando on a nightclub of homosexuals gathered, right? LGBT.
Right. It was a gay.
It was a gay club, and the Muslim man thought he was doing Allah a service by killing all these people. I mean, he was pleasing Allah to kill all these people. That's an obvious target. San Bernardino, I don't know. It just seems like this seems more like it would terrify the public more. These kind of walking down the street and you got a bomb going off.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I don't know because I think
maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, I understand why you're saying
you understand
that
what
because
I'm saying?
Yeah, there's such a small percentage of homosexuals in America compared to the general population. But the thing that you have in common here is you have people who appear to be American citizens, you know, who appear to have taken up the mantle of jihad without ever having to travel overseas or to come here from overseas. And I think that common thread is what underscores the American populace sensitivity to this issue, which I think Donald Trump has struck a chord with in campaigning for the presidency. But I do see what you're saying as most Americans would probably relate more immediately to the notion of, well, I'm just going to participate in this 5K race to support the Marines, as opposed to being someone who would find their entertainment in a homosexual nightclub. So I don't know.
I'm being inarticulate about this, but Ed, you know what I'm saying? This feels like it's more.
You mean more random?
Yes, I guess you could say.
Well,
on the places.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that because in Paris, remember the attack there? That was at a theater, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was at a theater. So I think that. What these ISIS fanatics and these jihadis are going for is they're going for groups, people, places where they can find groups of people to kill, and people who are either not Muslims or who are not Muslims who support them, but for the most part, Westerners. And so anywhere they can find people congregating, that's why I'm surprised that it hasn't happened at a sporting event, mm-hmm. a large sporting event in an enclosed area, not like mm-hmm. the Boston Marathon, but at a football game or a basketball game or something like that. Because you not only want a target where you can kill people or hurt them, but then generate fear,
mm-hmm.
you know, to make America fear the Islamic jihadist,
mm-hmm.
and that's what they're after, because then you can say, well, you need to submit.
Yeah.
Well, according to Fox News, there's a suspect in custody after a shootout in New Jersey.
Wow.
Right now. Now, the man who they're looking for, police, is an Afghan-born man, Abe.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a naturalized citizen,
a naturalized citizen, yes.
So he's an immigrant from Afghanistan, right?
Yes.
Now, this leads into the whole political question that's part of the presidential campaign, because President Obama and Hillary Clinton want to allow tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many, where they want to stop. They want to welcome more Muslims into America and drop them into places all around the country.
Very small percentage Christian. It's all Muslims.
Right. Very small. I mean, low single digits.
Right.
And Donald Trump has said, whoa, just a minute. This is not a good idea, and we need to stop this.
Mm.
Who do you think this helps or hurts?
it doesn't appear to me to help Hillary Clinton. I mean, one of the things that has contributed to Donald Trump's ascendancy, if you will, has been his hard line concerning illegal immigration, and more particularly the threat of Islamic Jihad. I mean, he announces quite aggressively that he's the only presidential candidate in the race that's even willing to say the words Islamic terrorism.
Right.
You know, so this type of thing I'm pretty sure it has the Clinton campaign wishing it had not happened.
Because they have a debate 1 week from tonight.
1 week from tonight, yeah.
And this will come up. It should come up unless
Andy
Crawley's there
up.
To protect Hillary.
yeah, that's true. And I think you can't minimize the commonality between the usage of pressure cookers now and the usage of pressure cookers in the Boston bombing,
right.
The Boston Marathon bombing. I mean, and I think it gives a good footing to also segue, which is another talking point for the Trump campaign, the idiocy of extreme gun control legislation when we see that all of these instrumentalities have been, if in the hands of evil people, regardless of the instrumentality, it's evil people who use it to kill, maim, and injure, and dismember.
Well, I know these left-wing politicians and the left-wing media, you know, every time one of these things happens, these terrorist attacks, they're just hoping it's a white male Christian. You know, if they can just get one, you know, if they can just get Timothy McVeigh, and then they can hang on to that for 20 years and say, look.
As they've hung on to Timothy McVeigh.
Even though there was no.
Since
even though Timothy McVeigh never said anything, his cause, whatever it was exactly, wasn't related to Christianity at all.
No.
Just the fact that he was a white male from the Midwest, it made him de facto Christian.
Right.
And there you go. Christians can do this kind of thing too. But it's just time after time after time after time after time. Again, it's the Muslim males doing these kinds of acts of doing these acts of jihad. And you know that, and then the left is always having to say this is not Islam and this is a religion of peace. In fact, in the White House, I know they've got a press statement that they wrote a few years ago that they have to pull out about every week or two that says the same thing. You know, Islam is a religion of peace. You know, the same line
that
they have to use to keep saying this. As we've said before, bears repeating, certainly all Muslims are not terrorists.
Right.
But all the terrorists are Muslims. Almost. I could be challenged on all the terrorists are Muslims. I know there are other acts of terrorism that go on on rare occasion around the world. But what the world is at war with right now, the civilized war, is Muslim jihadists. And that's just a fact. We can pretend that isn't so, but that's just and you know, even everybody can see it.
Right.
Everybody knows this, even though we have a president and others who pretend like it isn't so, we all see it for what it is.
It appears that they've caught this Ahmad Khan Rahami in New Jersey.
He was
the one that they were able to detain
so
after the shootout.
It could have
morning.
Just as easily been a blonde Swede who was a, you know, a Lutheran. But you're telling me it was a Middle Eastern Muslim?
Huh? Ahmad Khan Rahami, born in Afghanistan. They detained him this morning after the shootout.
So they got him alive.
Yeah, they got him alive.
Right.
Well, that's surprising. They usually want to die in an act of jihad.
Yeah. Well, there was a shootout, so I'm not sure.
Well, the fact that if they did get him alive, they can interrogate him.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll find out what his motivation is. I'm sure he's going to say.
Well, if his motivation is jihad and he tells them that, they'll say that can't possibly be.
Right.
This is how
we're gonna have to.
This is the PC world we live in
today.
You can't, when somebody says, I'm doing this because of my Muslim faith and belief in jihad, I'm supposed to kill infidels, then the FBI and others say, we don't accept that answer. You must give us something else. Huh? Were you have a bad childhood?
Right.
Or
unemployment.
Unemployment.
Just climate change.
Just
whatever the case may be.
Climate change.
Climate change. You're listening to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Ed, our next guest is?
Yes, we want to welcome John Allen, who's associate editor of Crux, maybe Crew. I'll have to ask John, at the Boston Globe. He's author of the book we're going to discuss with him. Interestingly enough, it's probably an appropriate topic. The Global War on Christians, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Anti-Christian Persecution. John, welcome to the program.
It is an honor to be on the American Family Radio with you guys, Tim and Ed. Just one small correction. Crux is no longer with the Boston Globe. We are now independent, and I have ascended from the position of associate editor to grand poobah. So I am now the editor.
Well, congratulations. On your
it was sort of imposed upon us, but nevertheless, I'm now the president and CEO, and very glad to be with you to discuss this important subject.
Where are you today, Brother John?
I am at the global headquarters of the Crux Catholic Media Empire, which is in beautiful Denver, Colorado, where all is right with the world. The Broncos are now 2-0, and I'm feeling good about life.
Okay. The Global War on Christians, that's the title of your book. Talk about that. What motivated you to write this?
Well, you know, my day job has, for the last 20 years, has really been covering the Vatican. And I got started following Pope John Paul II, now St. John Paul II, around the world. And in 2001, he took a trip to Ukraine. And I met a young woman whose grandfather had been a Greek Catholic priest. You know, in the Eastern Catholic churches, the priests are allowed to get married. And he had been arrested by the Soviets and shipped off to a gulag and crucified upside down on the prison walls. You know, this was the 1960s. This wasn't the early church, you know, and it really smacked me in the face about how martyrdom isn't just a dusty artifact of early church history, but it's something that's happening in the here and now. And so I started looking for stories of the new Christian martyrs, and I was just stunned at how easy they are to find. I mean, you know, the high-end estimate for the number of Christians around the world who are killed each year for their faith, which comes to us from the Center for the Study of Global Christianity at Gordon-Conwell Seminary, is about 100,000. The low-end estimate is around 8,000. That's from the World Council of Churches. But that works out to either one new Christian martyr every 5 minutes, or one new Christian martyr every hour of every day, 365 days a year, 7 days a week. It's a staggering total. You know, Pope Francis, the current Pope of the Catholic Church, has said on multiple occasions that statistically there are more martyrs today than at any period in the history of the Church. And that's not just pious rhetoric, that's an empirical fact. So I wanted to collect their stories because there's a kind of wall of silence that surrounds this issue of anti-Christian persecution, and I wanted to try to break through it.
Well, and in this book, you make, and there is a lot more attention that's being paid to the persecution of Christians worldwide. It's still, I think, under the radar for much of the church, but according to the International Society for Human Rights, now this is a secular observatory based in Frankfurt, Germany, 80% of all acts of religious discrimination in the world today are directed at Christians. Now that's, you know, if you listen to the media here in this country and in much of the West, in Europe, where they're having all sorts of problems with the Muslim immigrants that have been, you know, just pouring into the country, the big problem is Islamophobia. It is apparently a problem that is more in terms of persecution directed towards Muslims than Christians. But all the statistics, all the studies worldwide, at least, seem to indicate what you're saying is true, and that is that Christians are in the crosshairs.
Well, yeah, that's right. And to say that Christians, statistically speaking, and this is a fact, okay, this is not a theory or a hunch or a gut impression. It is a statistical fact that Christians are the most persecuted religious body on the face of the planet today. That is not to deny that there is a real problem with prejudice against Muslims, Jews, Hindus, Buddhists, or other religious groups. But it is simply to say that Christians, there is a kind of special need for focus on Christians, I think both because of the numbers, and part of it is simply because there are more Christians than everybody else. You know, there are 2.3 billion Christians on the face of the planet.
Right.
That's a third of the human population. And the zones of Christianity's greatest growth today are in places such as sub-Saharan Africa, parts of Asia, even pockets of the Middle East, which are not neighborhoods in which religious freedom typically is a kind of cherished value. So they are exposed in a special way. That's not to deny the problems that other groups face. It is simply to say that there is a particular need for focus on Christians. And if I can add to that, I think the other reason why we need to talk as much as we can about this issue is because there is a kind of psychological block in the West, by which I mean North America and Europe, in talking about this issue, because historically, we have seen Christians as the persecutors rather than the persecutees, right? I mean, you know, you say religious persecution to the typical Westerner, what they're going to flash on are episodes such as the Crusades or the wars against religion or the Salem witch trials or Galileo or whatever. I mean, all of these well-known episodes in which Christians were basically the bad guys. Right. And it's very difficult for people to get their mind around the fact that today Christianity is a very different animal. Two-thirds of the Christians in the world live outside the West. They live in the developing world, the impoverished world. And many of them are exposed to brutal kinds of persecution that just almost stagger the imagination. And as I say, we have to break through the wall of silence that surrounds that issue and get people to acknowledge that this is a real problem that needs a coordinated human rights response.
So do you think that the church is figuring this out? I mentioned that a lot of times it still seems as if this persecution, you know, almost entire swaths of historic Christianity, you know, being eliminated from the Middle East, you know, you're talking about the Assyrian Christians and what have you. Do you think the church is catching on to what's going on? The church in the West, are they catching on to what's happening to their brothers and sisters around the world? Or is it still a story that doesn't get much traction in the West?
Well, my read would be, and this, of course, is painting with an overly broad brush, but just to speak in generalities, you know, my read would be, the Christians in the West have slowly but surely caught on that this is happening. Listen, when I first brought out my book, The Global War on Christians, which was now almost 4 years ago, there was a kind of climate of almost total denial. I mean, I remember clearly going on TV to talk about the book, and the first question I got was, what do you mean anti-Christian persecution, right? I mean, the whole category was alien to people. Today, because of what's happened in Iraq and Syria with ISIS, I think that's over. I mean, there is now an acknowledgement that there is a targeted campaign of what the U.S. State Department has even officially recognized as genocide directed against Christians and other minorities in Iraq and Syria. So the new form of denial is that it happens any place other than the Middle East. I mean, listen, guys, let's be clear. Radical Islamic jihadism is the world's leading manufacturer of anti-Christian hatred. It's the central threat to Christianity today, particularly in the Middle East. But if Islamic extremism dropped off the face of the planet tomorrow, that would not mean Christians are safe. Let me give you another example. The most violent anti-Christian pogrom of the early 21st century didn't take place anywhere in the Middle East. It took place in India in 2008. Where more than 100 Christians were brutally put to death in a series of riots. Thousands were injured, most of them seriously. About 50,000 Christians were driven to take exile in a forest where more of them died of hunger, exhaustion, and snake bite. Mm-hmm. And all of that was not at the hands of radical jihadists. It was at the hands of radical Hindus. So this is not a problem that is confined to the Middle East or confined to Islamic extremism, although it's its most gruesome form today. It is a global problem, and in my opinion, it is the transcendent human rights issue of our time. And you don't have to be Christian to acknowledge it. In the same way that you did not have to be Jewish in the 1960s to be concerned about the fate of dissident Jews in the Soviet Union, and you did not have to be black in the 1980s to be concerned about the impact of apartheid in South Africa, today you do not have to be Christian to recognize that Christians face lethal threats to a greater extent than any other minority group in the world, and they deserve the same kind of transcendent human rights mobilization that dissident Jews got in the 60s and the blacks in South Africa got in the 80s.
Yeah, but it's payback for the Crusades.
Well, you know, and a lot of people say that, to be honest with you, you know? I mean, they will say, hey, what goes around comes around. But the thing of it is, you know, the black Christian in Nigeria who's today being torn to shreds by Boko Haram, or the Indian Christian in Kandahar who is being slaughtered by, militant Hindu nationalists, they had nothing to do with their crusades. They don't bear the responsibility for that. These are innocent people who are being persecuted. And I don't just mean like legal discrimination, but I mean actual lethal physical violence. They're being targeted for nothing other than their beliefs.
Hey, John, let me...
And I think any decent person would recognize that as an outrage.
We're talking to John L. Allen, Jr., author of The Global War on Christians. That question was tongue-in-cheek in part, but if you can have an in-part tongue-in-cheek question. I want to ask you this. We have about 5 minutes to go, 4 minutes to go here. What is it about Christianity that is so offensive and threatening to the people who are persecuting Christians around the world? What is it that, you understand what I'm saying? What is it?
Yeah, I do.
Go answer that question, please.
Well, listen, I think one level of it is political. I mean, in places such as the Middle East, Asia, Sub-Saharan Africa, Christianity is identified with the West, right? It's seen as a Western religion. So if people there have beefs against the West, like if they don't like what the United States is doing, they don't like what the EU is doing, it is very hard to march down to the American embassy, which is surrounded by, you know, concrete barriers and battalions of Marines, and express your outrage. But it is very easy to march down to the Christian parish down the block and take out your frustrations there. So I think that's one part of it. But the other part of it, guys, and I think we just have to face this as a reality, is that Christianity is essentially a nonviolent religion. We do not respond in kind. Other than, you know, isolated spots of the planet, such as the Central African Republic, where you can find organized sort of militant Christian groups, generally speaking, when Christians suffer violence, they don't respond with violence. So Christianity is, in a sense, a soft target. You can go after it and not really worry about violent reprisals, which means that in the minds of these extremist militant groups who think only in terms of armed force, they see attacking Christians as basically a win-win proposition. I mean, they get to make a statement about what they don't like, what they're mad at, and at the same time, they don't really have to worry about blowback. And I think, you know, you wrap all that up together, it explains why this contagion of anti-Christian violence, and I will say it again, has become the defining human rights issue of our time.
Well, listen, thanks so much, John, for your time. What's the name of your book again?
The book is The Global War on Christians, Dispatches from the Front Lines of Anti-Christian Persecution. It is published by Doubleday, an imprint of Random House. You can find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble or, you know, wherever fine books are sold.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it.
Great to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, John.
John, what do you think about what we talked about there, Abe?
I think it's it's sobering to consider the great extent of persecution of Christians all around the world. And I also think it should light a fire under us Christians in America, one, to fight to the last to protect what we do have, and two, to develop a true solidarity and affinity for the true family that we're a part of, which is the family of God.
I think that you're exactly right. And you know what I'm thinking as I was listening to you talk, it's for these Christians, and I just won't ever forget the with the 19... in Libya, the Coptic Christians,
beheaded,
Egyptians, in those orange jumpsuits.
Right. Yeah.
I never watched the beheading, but I saw them kneeling and they had the knives to their throats. They stood faithful to Christ, and we can't even get Christians in this country to stand up for basic biblical doctrines and themes. They just won't do it. Yeah. They're afraid of being poked fun at a party while these brothers are being beheaded on the beach with great courage and faithfulness to our Lord. Mm. Sermon over.
That's why American Family Radio is so important. I can't tell you the countless stories I've heard from Christians who were lackadaisical or apathetic. They went to church, believed in God, but it was only when they started listening to AFR that they really got informed and educated and motivated. So we need to pray for our own ministry that we continue to reach people here at American Family Radio. We'll be back after the news. Stay with us.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.